Warwick Hadfield is here with the sport. Good morning, Warwick.
Good morning, Hamish.
Let's start with the netball. The Stars have realigned in the Constellation Cup, Australia beating New Zealand in game two.
That second verse of the national anthem, "So long as we beat New Zealand," Hamish. The score 48-42. This margin, of course, in contrast to the last two games between these nations, which were decided by a single goal. This win means the Diamonds have levelled the series with two games to go. Last night, Gretel Tippett did the bulk of the goal scoring, 23 from 24 shots. That's straight shooting. Before going off at half time, and she had good support from her captain, Caitlin Bassett, over her injuries, 17 from 20. But as ever in matches at this elite level, it doesn't matter how many goals you score if your teammates down back don't do their job in defence, and that's where the game was really won for Australia. Wearing the GK bib with robust enthusiasm, Courtney Bruce did the job on the Silver Ferns resident superstar Maria Falloud. Various times she did rise to her special best, but generally was kept quiet by Bruce and the rest of the Australian defence. Bruce made three interceptions, in fact, that led to Australian goals, and they were the moments that really helped set up the comprehensive win that honours the Australian coach Lisa Alexander's 100th game in charge of the Diamonds. And her 101st and 102nd games will now be played in Australia, Sydney and Perth. And look, if to win, to share the series over in New Zealand is probably as good a result as the Australians might have hoped for, although, as I say, they got very close in the first game, just that single goal. But it'll be a fascinating rest of the series here in Australia, Hamish.
Certainly will be. In the AFL, Essendon and Sydney unable to strike a deal, and that'll mean that Joe Danaher remains a Bomber.
Yes, Hamish, this was going to be the glamour deal of the AFL's trade period, but the Bombers, well, they wanted more for him than Sydney was prepared to offer, so that might be a bit of a slap in the face for Joe Danaher. Anyway, at 7:30 last night, the no-deal sign went up, and Danaher was being advised by friends and supporters to shave off that mo if he didn't want to be so readily recognised in Melbourne, and to get himself fit after spending most of the last 2 years in rehab while on around $800,000 a year. I think they call it tough love. In the other Essendon story relating to the supplement saga, ASADA did put out a blanket media release yesterday denying any general wrongdoing in relation to the whole supplement saga at Essendon, but not necessarily addressing some of the specific issues raised by the Herald Sun stories yesterday and by us on Radio National Breakfast. As has long been the case with this yarn, the Melbourne media ran to their normal spots in the trenches, those beaten to the story calling it a beat-up, with one journalist actually putting his byline on top of the ASADA media release, another nail in the coffin of independent journalism. I spoke to a lot of people.
Seriously?
Seriously. I won't name the publication, but yeah, pretty much so, Hamish. It does make you raise your eyebrows these days. Particularly if you were brought up in a different time in the eras of journalism. Look, I spoke to a lot of the key players yesterday who did have concerns about the way ASADA shaped its evidence, but didn't want to go on the record, and there it might have ended until late in the day. Job Watson, the former Essendon captain who had to give back his Brownlow medal and who has been criticised for not doing more in support of his former teammate Nathan Lovett-Murray in fighting to prove the innocence of the players. Now, he put out this tweet. It was only a few words, that's what the nature of tweets are, but it was all that was needed for the people pushing to try and get the players cleared. As I say to my bulldog Benson, if it smells, keep digging.
Good advice all round. Warwick, the tennis, the busiest person in Ipswich these days is Ash Barty's cabinet maker. The local girl guide made good, awarded two more gongs last night.
Yeah, Hamish, already trying to find space for the Don Award that she won a couple of weeks ago. Ashley Barty won Sportswoman of the Year and Moment of the Year at the Women's Sport Australia's glittering red carpet gala evening last night. In 2019, Barty, all of 23, she won the French Open and, of course, rose to the number one ranked women's player on this planet and any other planet for that matter. And her ascendancy in both local and global terms will only continue if she leads Australia to victory in the final of the Federation Cup, which is going to be played in Perth next month. She might need a whole new house if that happens. Now, not surprisingly, the Australian women's cricketers, who Barty might have once joined and got a gong there, they were named Team of the Year. They won their Ashes, and Meg Lanning, Elisa Healy, Elise Perry, et al. Look set to continue as the best team in the world all the way to the T20 World Cup next year, for which they might get around $2 million in prize money. How things are changing.
Indeed. The Rugby League Grand Final, not going to be leaving Sydney after all, it seems.
if it ever was, Hamish, the speculation it might go to Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, or even New Zealand, turns out to be little more than a bargaining chip to get a better deal in Sydney from the New South Wales taxpayer, while the Olympic Stadium is being refurbished, and that better deal is apparently an extra $10 million on top of the $2.1 billion New South Wales is spending on new stadia. And the decision yesterday means that the grand final will remain in Sydney when it returns to the Olympic Stadium until at least 2046. But rest assured, Queenslanders, the NRL still loves you.
We've got a World Cup quarterfinal ahead against England in the rugby union, but possibly a pretty big positional change in the back line for the Wallabies.
Well, yeah, Hamish, the whisper is that the teenage wonderkind, Jordan Petaia, will be chosen in the centres, having had his first couple of games for Australia on the wing, where he did well, but well enough to match the English. We'll have to wait and see. It means that James O'Connor will be gathering splinters on the bench, and two other key backline positions which have been shuffled more than a deck of cards at the casino, 9 and 10. They look like being filled by Will Genia and Christian Leilafano. Whatever combination the Australians finally sent out on the field, the fact they're playing England, which hasn't won a knockout game in this competition for 12 years, so has plenty to play for, it means for the Wallabies, beware of low-swinging chariots, Hamish.
Warwick, thank you very much indeed. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.